Welcome to the Flow State Podcast, where we're all about finding balance. We're your hosts, Monica Groney
and Nora Candido. Now let's get into the flow.
Welcome back, Flow State Podcast listeners. Today we have a very exciting guest. I think I can speak for both Nora and I when I say that we are so excited to speak to Dr. Gabrielle Lyon today. She has been someone that I have been looking to for knowledge and information when it comes to building strength, increasing protein intake, and the organ of longevity, which is skeletal muscle. You guys know I love this topic. You know, I love talking about fitness, improving strength, why women need to be stronger, and of course, eating more protein. So today's conversation, we are touching on all of those things and learning from someone who has literally created an entire corner of medicine around muscle as medicine. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. We're so grateful to have Dr. Lyon here with us, and I hope you enjoy and learn something today.
Thank you so, so much for joining us. I would love for you to just introduce yourself a little bit more to our listeners and also just share how you got interested in this field and kind of when or why your own muscle journey began.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, and I'm a fellowship-trained physician. I've trained 7 years in professional nutrition training, and then I'm a physician, and I did a clinical fellowship, a combined clinical and research fellowship in nutritional sciences and geriatrics. My story is a little bit different. I think a lot of physicians change their scope of work when they do something more wellness focused, but I didn't. I actually got really interested in nutrition from the get-go. My godmother is a PhD in nutritional sciences and an OG in the space of functional medicine. And I lived with her on Hawaii and worked for Room and Board. And that I saw that path as just something that was so fascinating and meaningful to help serve our fellow human. And that was it. It was like love at first sight.
That makes a lot of sense. I actually just got home from Hawaii and the wellness arena there is strong. So I can see that correlation if you were living there. And so amazing. I think it's really incredible to see how you practice and how drastically different it is from most of our experiences with practitioners. So, so grateful for you kind of breaking that norm for us.
Yes, of course, of course. You know, they say that a good physician or a capable physician recognizes patterns of diseases. But I would say that an exceptional physician recognizes patterns of people. And it truly is the person sitting in front of you.
I love that. And so appreciate hearing that come from a doctor. And I think Monica and I both read your recent book, Forever Strong. We absolutely loved it. We're excited to dig even deeper into some of those topics today and just share with the general population a lot of these important pieces of information that we all deserve to have access to that we're not typically told by our doctor to implement movement and nutrition. So we're really excited to dig into that today. But I wanted to call out something that I absolutely loved from the book is the mindset piece. And just hearing you talk about, like, it's really about the person in front of you. It's not about just blood work or just their presentation. It's who they are as a human inside and out. And I really appreciated that being intertwined throughout the book. And I think we should definitely chat on that today about how important our mind is and how we're talking to ourselves and just how we can change that too. It's not fixed.
That's right. You know, it's fascinating because the common denominator for the success of any person will always be based on their health. That is the underlying common denominator. An individual will never go higher than their health. And people think that the mind is separate than the body. I've been a physician since 2006, and I will tell you, almost every physician goes through different cycles of their providership. You know, to be a physician is truly an honor. And during the ancient times, when a physician were to care for a person and a patient, it was their responsibility. It wasn't transactional. you know, when you needed that doctor was there. It was much more, obviously I wasn't alive back then, but it was much more relationship oriented. And I think that we fail to appreciate the fact that there is really a twofold kind of journey. There's the journey of the patient, what they're going through, whether they're going through hormonal changes or gut health issues. And then there's the patient's experience, so with themselves, and then their experience with their provider. And if they get in the hands of a really good provider, I think there's almost a mentorship that happens.
Absolutely.
And Excel, right? Medicine is just the gateway. It's just the modality used to get to the underbelly of the person to make the person the best version of themselves.
Love that.
Hey there, Flow State podcast listeners. It's your host, Monica. I wanted to interrupt this episode real quick to share with you a little bit about my brand, Mireya. Mireya is a nutritional company that helps support women who are dealing with symptoms of hormone imbalance. I don't know about you, but I struggled with awful periods for over 17 years. Head back to season 1, episode 5 to learn more about my story and struggles with PMDD. When I discovered the life-changing benefits of having a solid foundational multivitamin in my everyday routine, my life was changed forever. I had more energy, my moods were balanced, I was able to resume life as usual, and feeling normal sometimes just feels so freaking good. That's why I teamed up with dietitians, nutritionists, naturopathic doctors, and OBGYN to create the best possible foundational multivitamin for women who experience symptoms of hormone imbalance. I am so excited to share this with you. If you haven't checked it out yet, head to www.mireyawellness.com. And of course, for all of our listeners, I have a special discount. You can use the code FLOWPOD, FLOWPOD at checkout to get a special discount. Okay, back to the episode. It's amazing to hear you talk about that, because I think the most popular experience for the general patient is not that. You know, most people listening are going to totally relate to this, get 5 minutes with their doctor and their doctor's on to the next. So how incredible that it is kind of in your mission and part of how you practice that you are really spending that time and creating that relationship with the patient.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I would have to say that the way that the healthcare system is set up is not set up to be able to really get to know the patients. But there are many physicians that would love to have more time with their patients. And so you just have to find the right provider that really resonates.
All right. Well, let's get into some of the topics that we really want to discuss today. Our listeners know that both Nora and I are big proponents of protein and muscle. And we know that that is your zone of genius. So I would love for you to share with our audience, what is muscle-centric medicine, which is the medicine that you practice?
Yes, I actually developed it. Muscle-centric medicine is this concept that skeletal muscle is the pinnacle of health and wellness, and it truly is the organ of longevity. People typically think about skeletal muscle is as it relates to exercise, but skeletal muscle and the diseases of aging and the diseases of Western society, all related to metabolism, begin in skeletal muscle first. The other flip side to that, you know, and I'm saying in absolutes, but I would say probably 80%, if not more, of the diseases and the challenges that we face can be tied back to the health of one's skeletal muscle. And skeletal muscle, the idea of muscle-centric medicine, is more of a holistic perspective. It's not just about what you eat. It's not just about what you move. It's not just about your hormones. It's not just about your stress and your inflammation. It's about all of it. And how do we keep the architecture of our infrastructure, which is skeletal muscle, healthy? And that's really the lever that we pull. Because once you dial in the health of skeletal muscle, the other component to that is that your mind is stronger. A weak mind does not exist in a strong body. And those are the other components to think about, you know, the longevity and the capacity that someone lives to.
What really got you honed in on muscle as this kind of like center of health and wellness?
Yeah, well, I trained under one of the world-leading experts in protein metabolism. And as we know, protein is critical for the health of skeletal muscle. And at the time, I was really interested in health and fitness and bodybuilding and all of the things, right? If it had to do with muscle, I was obsessed with it. And I studied nutritional sciences for 4 years. And then I decided to go to medical school. But my love for nutrition never ended. I was always interested in muscle. And then, of course, being very focused in on protein before it was this hot topic. It was just something that I was so incredibly fascinated by, the biochemistry of it, the way in which someone would leverage their diet to feed their muscle. And I went back and I did a fellowship. So I finished my family practice residency. Then I went back and I did a fellowship in nutritional sciences and geriatrics, which for the listener is really the end of longevity. So it's the age of 65. It is truly kind of this continuum of longevity. And I had this one patient, and she was in her mid-50s, and she had done everything that everybody told her. She ate less, did more cardio. And I was looking at the interface between body composition and brain function, and I imaged her brain, and her brain looked like the beginning of an Alzheimer's brain. And I realized that the medical community, society had failed her. And it was at that moment that I realized that we had been focusing on the wrong stuff and that we didn't have an obesity epidemic. What we had was this midlife muscle crisis.
I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of those end of life diseases start in our 30s and our 40s, right? And a lot of these things are so preventable. And if we can utilize our muscle system to help support and prevent that. Like for me, I hope to live a long life, but I want my quality of life to be there. I don't want to be a vegetable, right?
No, nobody wants to. And what I love about the fact that you guys are having me on here is that you recognize the importance of this now. If you guys and you people out there are listening to this podcast or this YouTube, you must understand that what you pay now is what you will reap later. And the health of your skeletal muscle, people are thinking, I'm lean, it doesn't matter. What you do now will determine the rest of your life. People fail to recognize that until it's too late. They're very distracted by different nutritional strategies. They're grasping, they're doing these things. In your 20s and 30s, this is the time, my friends, that you lay down the tissue that is going to bring you throughout aging. This is the time. You have to strike while the iron is hot. And I will tell you this, if you fail to do the practical will become impossible. The practical, like train hard, like your life depends on it, because it does. Eat well, that's all practical, and move in a way in which you are training to get better at life. Not better at exercise, but better at life. You do those things and you understand there's not one thing that is more important than nailing this now. If I could give ladies one piece of advice, get your muscle in check. Everything else will fall into place. PCOS will fall into place. Fertility will fall into place. Nail the things that matter that aren't always easy, and the rest will come.
I think the female population is an interesting one as well on this topic, because we've been taught and shown by the media that firstly, if we're focusing on muscle, we're just going to get bulky. And secondly, the only reason we should focus on this is aesthetic, right? And while the aesthetic is wonderful, we all want to look toned and great and good and feel good in our bodies. There's just so much more to muscle and fitness than aesthetic. Like you were talking about, our brain health, right? Our mood, our energy, our sleep. Can you maybe just dig in a little bit more on some of the benefits outside of just aesthetic for women listening?
The Nutrition with Nora Academy is here, an online platform built to empower you through education around your health, from a trusted source, me, Nora, your registered dietitian. Come here to learn, seek community, accountability, and get your questions answered through workshops, events, and guest expert sessions. As a valued Flow State listener, you will receive a special discount. I'm overjoyed to have an accessible place for individuals to come, learn, and work with me. Come check it out.
Yeah, the thing with muscle is that we all know it to be this aesthetic piece, and that piece is great. Who doesn't want to look good naked, and who doesn't want to look jacked? And yes, thank you to all of it. Yes, who doesn't want to have a great metabolism? Muscle is the currency for your health. When you eat carbohydrates, where do you think it goes?
Muscles.
Muscle. When you exercise and you contract skeletal muscle, do you know that muscle is an organ system that releases myokines in direct relationship to how intense you are training? Interfaces with the immune system. Who doesn't want to have a lower body fat, less inflammation, and better fertility, better sex drive, better sexual health? People want these things. Do you know that, you know, we think about obesity as this, as the starting place? It's not. It's skeletal muscle. We know that there's a risk of obesity and cancers, certain types of cancers. We know that there's a risk of obesity and infertility. We know that the healthier we are, the healthier our children will be. Skeletal muscle does all of these things. It's our body armor. It's everything. It's everything. And it's the only organ system, my friends, that we can control. I can contract my body because I can do it. You can't do that. If I said, Monica, Nora, please, I want you to have your heart beat at 153 and a half beats per minute. Go. I'll wait. It's never going to happen.
I was one thing I wanted to ask you about because I hear a lot of people, oh, you know, this runs in my family. Obesity runs in my family. High cholesterol runs in my family. And again, that reframe too, if we can give people the wording to say, well, what if it actually doesn't? And here are the things that you can do to support it. I would love for you to just chat on that a little bit.
I think it's an interesting question. And I do think that obesity is highly complex. However, when you look back in the 1950s, we don't see obesity. I can't say that our genetics have changed that much. I think that, again, for the most part, there is something that you can do about it. For the most part. Now, listen, are there issues in which there are genetic problems that whether someone has Prader-Willi or some kind of genetic predisposition? Possibly. But there's so much that can be done with diet and exercise that we have to pull that lever. 50% of Americans are not exercising. 70% of our diet is junk food. So 70% of our diet comes from processed foods and plant oils, etc. And 70% of us are either overweight or obese. It's hard to say that that would be genetic.
Yeah, I liked that discussion in the book too, just talking about like protein quality. I think from a lot of rhetoric and poor guidelines that were taught, even as dietitians, I'm sure in your schooling too, like they're outdated. They're not based on foundational studies or really have been updated in a very, very long time. But just talking through a little bit on like that protein quality, and maybe we can dive more into protein in general.
Protein quality is this crazy thing. You guys, are you both dietitians?
Nora's a dietitian. I'm a health coach.
Protein quality has been around forever. Protein quality is a non-emotional biological value number. There's no conversation about is plant protein high quality or low quality. It's a low quality protein based on its amino acid profile. Beef is a high quality protein simply based on its amino acid profile. That's it. It's plain and simple, based on the leucine, isoleucine, valine, limiting amino acids. That's it. Discussion's over. You know, that's where I can leave that. Is high quality and low quality protein interchangeable? It's not. Could you get enough protein on a plant-based diet? You could. Probably need 35 to 45% more. Then the next question are, what are the other physiological needs of the body, like iron, zinc, B12, vitamin D, et cetera, et cetera? And serine, creatine, especially for women, creatine for women. Their stores are already lower. So when we're thinking about designing a diet, we have to think about a whole foods, or you should, or you could potentially think about a whole foods type of diet. And how can we design something like that?
Yeah. Why do you think more providers don't just share that in their sessions?
They're not educated.
Right? And to me, it's just so sad.
I don't actually think so. Do you know why? So I think about my training. I did an undergraduate in human nutrition, vitamin, mineral, metabolism. Then I went to medical school. Then I did 2 years of psychiatry and 3 years of family medicine. That's 5 years of residency training to do something only I could do, like only a physician, like to meet a standard of care. These were the things that had to be done. And then I went back and did a nutritional science fellowship. It would be asking way too much of my peers to become an expert. I had already done 7 years. It would be asking way too much of my peers So my husband, he's a surgeon. So he's a surgical resident in urology. He works 120 hours a week. It would not behoove him to be an ex. He couldn't do it. There's not enough hours in the day. So I think that where physicians fail us is they don't acknowledge their limitations. So it's not that they should know. I don't think that they should be giving nutrition advice, quite frankly.
Well, I agree with that.
I don't think physical therapists should be giving nutrition advice.
Yeah.
I think that if you are trained to give nutrition advice, and what does that even qualify? Is that a master's degree? I mean, what is that? What is the qualification to give advice in this domain? I don't think that it is structured. A dietitian is qualified to give nutrition advice, but like, where are the governing bodies and who should we be taking advice from?
And every single dietitian is different too. You know, if I were to practice the way that I learned in school, I would not be helping people, which is also sad in my opinion. You know, it's just a missed opportunity. And I hope that things are changing and updating for everybody involved. But no, I think it's a really good point. No, I don't think everybody should be an expert in nutrition or exercise. But even just introducing that idea to someone rather than prescribing something, I think is a missed opportunity.
Yes, but think about how the training of a physician is. I would rather have the physicians prescribe something than do nothing. I'd rather have them take action than take no action. So with this obesity epidemic, et cetera, there's a lot of discussion about GLP-1 agonists. I am definitely for these medications. I've seen them work. They work better than surgery. I'd much rather have someone be able to manage this problem than set them up for a lifetime of X, Y, and Z. You know, you still have to do all of the things, but you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Interesting. I'd be curious to hear. So just as an example, say a patient comes to you, they're presenting with hormonal imbalance symptoms, maybe they have PCOS, and you're approaching them with, of course, your muscle-centric medicine mindset. Where would you get someone started? You know, maybe they're part of that population that isn't exercising enough.
Yeah. And we've had many patients like this. PCOS is also complicated, and I think that there's a lot of literature that would point to skeletal muscle as a primary defect, whether it's insulin receptor issue, et cetera, but insulin resistance can happen, and you know, there's multiple ways in which insulin resistance can happen. But I don't think that we can discount the primary role that muscle plays with some people in PCOS. The first most effective thing that someone is going to be able to do is train. That is the most effective stimulus to skeletal muscle.
When you say train, what does that look like?
It looks like weightlifting and doing some kind of interval training, a high intensity interval training.
Sprints, baby.
Maybe it's one day a week, 20 minutes. You know, it depends on your threshold. You know, you could pick 30 seconds on, go out to your max capacity. Again, depends on what your threshold is, how well trained you are. If you're totally untrained, you're 80%. It's going to take time. So you could go for 30 seconds on, take a break for a minute, fully recover, do that for 20 minutes and be done. I think that that high intensity interval has been shown to improve insulin sensitivity. The primary site for insulin disposal is skeletal muscle. So you sensitize the muscle without the need of insulin.
I was just going to say, just for our listeners as well, you know, high intensity interval training has gotten this face in the fitness world. And I think that a lot of women are participating in high intensity, which is actually moderate intensity, by doing the Orange Theory and that type of thing. So high intensity is sprint training, and it's not the 45 minute sustained moderate intensity, because that's just wreaking havoc on your cortisol.
Right. So there's high intensity training, which is around 80%. And then there's sprint interval training, which is like 100%. You're all out effort. But what Monica's talking about is this steady state, moderate intensity. You're kind of like just doing it, probably not as effective. The less time you have, the more you have to hit it hard.
So you really think that it starts with the strength training, with building the muscle. And would you say that the strength training comes even before the nutrition element of it, or are those kind of pieced together?
They're pieced together. It shouldn't be one or the other. But if you were to pick one that is going to have a bigger impact, it's actually going to be the training. I mean, that's just what the science shows. Yeah, the science shows that, you know, because people would ask me, oh, is diet or exercise? And then I would say diet. But the truth is, it's not actually diet. That exercise has been shown to have more of an impact on body composition than diet. So I actually have a great study. I can pull up some numbers for you. I was looking at this. I did an interview for NPR, and this was a study out of Don Lehman's lab. And, you know, I did some of the earlier studies with him. And basically, this looked at two groups that were isocaloric, meaning they had the same calories, and they put one group on a, quote, low-protein diet, which is the RDA, 0.8 grams per kg, and one group on a, quote, high-protein diet, which was double the RDA, which equates to 1.6 grams per kg, which is just moderate. And without exercise, the net loss on the low-protein group, so they was isocaloric, so both was calorie-restricted. The low-protein group without exercise lost 35% of the weight that they lost. They lost from fat-free mass, which is muscle, bone, etc. The high-protein group lost 25% from fat-free mass. So they both lost weight, and they both lost lean body mass without exercise. If you add in exercise, the high protein plus exercise lost 9 pounds of fat and only lost 6% of fat-free mass. And the low protein plus exercise lost 9 pounds times, they actually lost 9 kilograms. So, I mean, that's a lot. That's like 20 pounds, something like that.
Yeah, 20 pounds, yeah.
And then the low protein group plus exercise lost 5.5 kilograms and 15% from fat-free mass lost. So you can see that the real magic is with the synergy of the both, of both of them.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me. I wanted to go back and just share a little bit from the insulin perspective and like how muscle acts as an endocrine organ, you know, talking a little bit more about that. Because if the general population might not even know, like, what does insulin do? How is lifting or exercising weight resistance going to help improve my blood sugar or my risk for type 2 diabetes? So can we dive into that?
Yeah. Well, insulin is a peptide hormone released from the pancreas, and it's actually a fail-safe mechanism for blood glucose. It should not be used as a primary driver to move blood glucose out of the bloodstream. The goal is that you wouldn't require a ton of insulin, right? You shouldn't be eating a diet, from my perspective, that is requiring robust amounts of insulin, because over time, this is not an effective mechanism for managing one's diet. Skeletal muscle is the primary site for glucose disposal. Anywhere from 60 to 80%, maybe even a little higher, is put away in skeletal muscle. And again, this is both resistance and cardiovascular activity. You move blood glucose out of the bloodstream into your muscle, your large muscles, without the use of insulin. And that's what makes it incredible. So for example, if you were to have a high carbohydrate meal and you have a continuous glucose monitor on and your blood sugar goes up, your insulin will subsequently also go up. But if you are walking, you will be able to move that blood sugar out, because you will utilize it out of the bloodstream into tissues.
This is why we talk about walking after meals, people.
Yep. Or you could do squats. I don't care what you do. Just do something.
Yeah, just get your heart rate up. I think that's interesting too. And something I wanted to ask you about, I feel like is related to this, is what are your thoughts on fasting, even like fasted training and that kind of thing?
I don't care about it. I could care less. Like, it's okay. I train fasted all the time. I think there's an individual aspect to it. I think that if someone was trying to get pregnant, potentially fasted training might not be ideal. Maybe it increases cortisol. Again, this is kind of a nebulous number. I haven't looked at a recent study, but I do say that when women are trying to get pregnant or looking for fertility, that they don't just fast and train. I mean, because there's, or if they're amenorrheic, because there is hypothalamic pituitary axis issues that happen when the body has a lot of perceived stress. But from a energy utilization standpoint, I don't think it matters. I train fasted. I train fasted when I was pregnant. I train fasted when I was trying to get pregnant.
Is there a reason that you've decided to do that, or you just feel better?
I just feel better. The body does whatever you train it to do.
I think that's also a lesson too, is like, for all of us, there's a lot of information out there and there's a lot of contradictory information out there, but for us to tune into how it feels in our body, right? Fasting, not fasting, fasted training. Like, have you tried it both ways and what does that feel like for you? That's maybe an important thing to pay attention to.
at the end of the day, I could say, well, here's this data. And you could be like, doc, I feel terrible on this. I'd say, okay, what am I going to say? No, the evidence says this. Number.
Yeah. I think that's really important. Goes along. We talk a lot about just being in tune with your body. And we did a whole episode on like not following cycle syncing recommendations for working out and talking about the same thing. You got to be in tune. Like if you need more recovery, if you need a day off, you don't need your period to tell you that you should take a rest day. Like, take the rest day.
We talked just briefly now about that hormone imbalance patient, maybe the PCOS patient. Do your recommendations change as the hormone life stage changes, say into perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause?
Yeah, of course. Also, I have to say that I am definitely someone who believes in hormone replacement therapy, starting it early and not trying to do it naturally. The only way that I would use any kind of herbal recalibration is if someone is young in their 20s. And there seems to be a lot of success with things like Vitex. I've had a lot of success in my own practice with that. But as an individual goes through perimenopause, you know, typically the first thing you start someone on is progesterone, oral micronized progesterone. And it helps at night, it helps with anxiety, it helps with bloating, it helps with water retention. And obviously, if someone needs it, I think that there's a lot of evidence to support it being extremely safe. And then as a woman goes into menopause, definitely starting her early on hormone replacement. Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, very valuable.
Do you change your training recommendations at all, or protein intake? Does that go up?
Well, it really depends on the person. When an individual is young, they can get away with less protein. So for example, I typically recommend 1 gram per pound ideal body weight. But if you're young, you could be at 0.7 grams per kg or 0.7 grams per pound ideal body weight. Definitely. Because think about it. You could do whatever you want and you'd still be kind of jacked when you're younger.
Yeah.
As long as you're training hard enough, you're going to be great. But the second these hormones begin to change, as women seem to go through menopause, estrogen decreases spontaneous activity. At least that's the most recent research that I've read. And really being aware that you're slowing down and doing more, you know, moving, et cetera, becomes important. The non-exercise activity.
I think one of the talking on the 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, a lot of the pushback that I hear on that is people are like, we can only absorb so much protein. How do you respond to that?
I mean, that's so outdated. We absorb all of it. I mean, it's just so outdated.
Yeah. It's a lot of the comments that I receive or I hear from people, because I speak about protein often, is, you know, oh, like this is going to harm your kidneys.
And I would say you got to read my book.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you really care about protein and you want some of the evidence, you got to read my book or join our community. We do a weekly Q&A, everything to support a person, to get them over the finish line, to figure it out.
And we just talked about individualization too, right? Like, if your body reacts differently, you can monitor that with blood work. You can make sure that we're being supportive of whatever your body needs to. But yeah, I hear that too, Monica. And I also hear like, oh, that's so much food. And it's like, well, if you're just in this starvation mindset to begin with, and you're trying to eat as little as possible, sure, it might look like a change. But when you learn about nutrient density and being able to prioritize protein to support your body, the extra food is not going to look the same, right? Like, we're not going to be craving sweets as much. We're not going to be filling our plates with more starchy vegetables or carbohydrates if we're prioritizing protein.
Speaking from someone too who made a big protein change in the last couple of years, like, I can tell you satiation is insane. My energy is so much better. I'm sleeping better. Like, everything just changes. It turns right around when you put protein as your number one. And then, yeah, it's been wild to experience it myself as someone who's been an athlete my whole life, even. It just like wasn't something I thought about until I was in my 30s.
Fair.
Yeah. Well, I think, Nora, do you have any other questions that you want to dive into before we kind of go into our wrap up?
I think one reflection or just kind of question for me, I feel like it's never too late to start, but I know we talked about in the beginning, like, the earlier the better for sure, but just giving people that to say it's never too late to start. I think that that is a really important piece to drive home There's always something that you can do, right?
Yes. It's never too late to start. That's such a huge thing. It's really important. The best time to start was yesterday. The second best time to start is today.
And I think too, just, you know, reiterating what you said on if you are starting later in life, like maybe that does mean you need a little higher dose of protein.
Definitely.
Yeah. So never too late to start. Start today. Don't start tomorrow. And protein, strength training. I think everyone here has heard us say this so many times through our episodes, whether it was with Stacey Sims or our individual episodes. And it's just another reiteration of the importance of this for our longevity, for hormone health, and for everything in between. Like, we just want to feel good and we want to look good, because there's nothing wrong with that either. And these two methods are an amazing place to start.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly why I wrote the book, Forever Strong, and really to help protect people from the distraction. One of the reasons why people never move forward is because they try this and then they switch and then they try this and then they switch. And it's the distraction that is utilized as an excuse, but it doesn't have to be, because if you stay laser focused and locked in to some of the foundations of science, you'll be able to make leaps and bounds of progress.
I just made a post about this yesterday. Like, it's not sexy. It's really not complicated. Like, you got to lift heavy. You got to be sleeping, hydrate, eat well, balanced meals, get enough protein. Like, it's not complicated, but I do think it's confusing for a lot of people. If you've never lifted before and you're just trying to go into the gym and you're not following a plan and you have no direction or guidance, like, hire someone, work with someone who does know and can make sure you're getting appropriate form and you're not going to injure yourself. But we need that structure, but it's not sexy. It's not complicated, in my opinion.
I agreed.
All right, a few final questions as we wrap up. These are questions that we like to ask all of our guests so that our audience can just get to know you a little bit more. Question number one is, and I'm sure I can just imagine what the answer to this is already, but what is your favorite meal to cook or consume?
A good steak would be great. Any meal with my family, my little ones.
Perfect.
Yeah, that was something I wanted to say in the beginning too, is, you know, I have a lot of admiration for you just demonstrating this for your children, for your patients, for being in this position and someone who is looked up to. You practice what you preach to. And I think that that's really important. That's something that we can pass down to our future generations, whether they're your biological or adopted children or not. People are watching, you know, and they're going to be learning from you too.
Nobody cares what you say.
Yeah.
Nobody cares what you say. Talk is cheap. It's easy.
Yeah.
But how do you show up when you don't? Do you think I want to get up? I have two children and a husband who's a surgical resident. I am exhausted.
Yeah, it's not like you're not busy. Holy shit.
I run three businesses.
Yeah.
I run three businesses, have two kids, and a husband who is a resident.
Yeah. And you still get the workouts in. You're still feeding yourself well.
Wait, not even get the workouts in. I crush them.
Yeah, hell yeah, you do.
I'm dialed in and ready to go. I am not going through the motions. If I'm showing up, I'm getting it done. And I only train 3 to 4 days a week. But you better believe it's not about the time that you're clocking in. It's about how you're clocking the time.
Yeah, it matters.
You know, you got to show up and you have to be focused.
Okay, do you prefer your morning routine or an evening routine?
Neither. I'm a mom with two little kids.
Fair. I love that. I think it's so realistic to say that.
Come on, morning routine. Only people that have morning routines don't have little children. Period.
Valid. Super valid.
It's just the truth. You have a morning routine and you have an evening routine, you're not responsible for entire families.
I love it.
One of the questions we love to ask, because we do talk about periods a lot, is, do you have a favorite period product?
I mean, there is Organic Olivia's products that has a bunch of herbal stuff. It's great. She's wonderful.
Amazing. I love her podcast.
Well, I wanted to sub this one and say, if there's one thing you could tell people or leave them with, what would it be?
The one thing that I would say is that there are things in life that are very predictable and we fail to plan for those things. And if you understand that there is a natural aging process then you plan for it. And you become as resilient and as durable as you can, both mentally and physically. And that will lead to a successful life because you are mentally and physically strong.
Letting that sit in. Thank you so much. Dr. Lyon, thank you for joining us today. Where can people find you and learn more about you and your practice?
Well, we have a community. The practice isn't available for everybody. We do have a full clinic that is remote. You'd have to apply to be a patient. We are accepting new patients, but we do have a new community that we launched, and we have weekly Q&As with different providers. Today, we have a Q&A with my trainer. He's going to come on and talk all about our training together. I have a podcast called The Dr. Gabrielle Lyon Show. I have a YouTube. I have an Instagram. We have a great newsletter where we put science stuff. And then, of course, my book, Forever Strong.
Go and pick it up. Read it. It is so good. I have sent it to my mom. I'm like sending it out left and right. So thank you for sharing all of your knowledge with everyone. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, really appreciate the conversation. I know this will land with a lot of people.
Thanks, Nora. Thank you.
The information in today's episode is not to be used as medical advice. If you are currently struggling with or dealing with something out of the ordinary, we highly recommend talking directly to your provider.